1969, and they told Chester and Nimitz they were going to cancel the Perkinelmer contract if we continued to design our own electron microscope and our own mass spectrometer. And Horace McDonald, who was the senior vice president at that time, came out to California to see me. I said, Vince, he said, we want you to go back to Norwalk. We're canceling the electron microscope program. We're canceling the mass spectrometer program. And I said, you got to be kidding. And they said, no, that's what we're going to do because this business that we've got now. I said, well, I built that business up. He said, no, but we can't lose that business. So I said, I quit. So I left Perkinelmer at the end of 1969 and went home and started thinking about what I was going to do next. And Len Walter came to see me and said, we know how to build this thing now and we know all about it, so let's start a company and do it. I said, that's a good idea, so let's do that. So that's how we started the Coates and Walter Instrument Corporation. We designed the world's first commercial field emission scanning electron microscope, and we patented several things which are now very standard with these instruments, but which we invented, including what was called the low voltage scanning electron microscope, where we could actually make pictures with accelerating voltages which were very, very low, 500 volts, 700 volts, and still get excellent pictures. And of course, at this low voltage, there was no damage to specimens, especially integrated circuits. So you could actually get pictures of integrated circuits without damaging them and so forth. So we had a nice business, and we ran out of money. And American Optical Corporation came along and bought us out completely. And I worked for several years more with them. Len Welder continued on and became president of the company. I left and formed Nanometrics in 1975, beginning of 1975. And they merely went on with their scanning electron microscope program, which turned out to be a unique and very special thing. And I won an award from the Semiconductor Manufacturing Association for having invented or part of the whole low voltage scanning electron microscope program. Hitachi was given the stuff that we had done at ELTEC and proceeded to build low voltage field emission scanning electron microscopes later on, and it became a $1 billion business for them. We were too small and not had enough engineers, but with that huge company, Hitachi, they ended up selling to the semiconductor industry $250,000 a year in those systems, and it became the most important product for inspecting and measuring integrated circuits for these low voltage field emission scanning electron microscopes. So anyway, I participated in that. It was a really terrific experience unto itself. I'd gotten completely away from infrared by that time. I was working in these other things, so I quit and I started Coates and Waller, and then we were bought out, and I worked. I found that it was not very nice any longer to work for other people, so I decided to start another company. So I started Nanometrics, and I sat down at my drawing board all by myself and spent a year designing what became the NanoSpec, spectrophotometer attached to a microscope. That's the original ad right up there, the NanoSpec AFT. And that's turned out to be a fairly successful product. There are about 5,000 of those, and about the same amount of business as the original Perkinelmer Model 21, and we've had a very successful company. But I designed it from scratch. I designed the spectrophotometer that was attached to the microscope, and discovered along the way that it had a lot of application, as I just mentioned to you, as we traveled through there, measuring the film thicknesses of the on the integrated circuits. It also had some applications in biology and crime laboratories, but not a very big market. We did some work in that area. So I can go into more detail, but that's about it. That's my career. So to this point, I am still deeply involved in new concepts and new products and helping with the design of things, which is my great love and thing that I like to do more than anything. I'll just mention in passing that I designed an infrared microscope because PerkinElmer had stopped making the Model 85, which was called, for nanometrics, called the NanoSpec 20IR,
mm-hmm.
which was the first commercial product which was successful. The customers were hungry for some kind of a microscope to look at very small samples. Later on, a number of companies that were what called FTIR,
right,
added infrared microscope attachments, and so that's become kind of a standard product of FTIR nowadays.
That's Digilab, are they the?
Digilab, right. And many others.
Mm. Nicolet.
PerkinElmer.
Nicolet didn't get into it.
Nicolet.
Yeah,
they all did. So I've sort of gotten away from infrared because we're so busy doing some of the other things. Mostly ultraviolet, visible, near-infrared stuff.
Hmm. Well, let's pause for just a moment. So if our research serves correctly, it was from 1955 till 59 that you were the manager of applied engineering.
Applications.
Applications engineering.
Not applied. Applications engineering.
Okay. And I guess one question about how applications engineering fit into the entire, you know, PerkinElmer landscape was its relationship to marketing and product development. If you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay. The as I concentrated almost entirely, in fact, entirely on the Model 21 program and the development of accessories and modifying the system to do more and more things. And then getting into sales, one of the things that had to be done in sales was, of course, is to have a demo lab. Mm-hmm. With the system set up, so when the customer came in, you bring a customer in and then you prepare his samples and so forth. So we would do that, and that developed into kind of an applications laboratory, and then we had a lab, we hired someone to actually do demonstrations. And a very important person showed up on the scene at that time. He was hired by Van Williams to participate in this applications work on the different products. His name was Harry Hausdorff. Have you heard of Harry Hausdorff?
I haven't.
Harry Hausdorff was a very interesting person, a very good friend of mine. He came from General Chemical Company, I believe, and they had one of our Model 21s, and he was intrigued by the instrument side of the business. So he applied for a job, and he was hired to actually be a person who demonstrated the equipment. He was Swiss, and he spoke quite good English. In fact, he spoke about five or six languages. And so he became very useful with respect to the European sales of our equipment. And when French guys wanted to buy it, he could speak to them French and some German. He spoke very good German, and of course from Switzerland, and English. And he concentrated a lot on correspondence with the European part of the business. And that sort of got PerkinElmer going in Europe, and Dick Perkin was interested in traveling to Europe, enjoying Europe, and so he would invite Harry Hausdorff to go along with him. They made a number of ocean trips on some of the big liners over to England and then all over the place. And Dick Perkin became interested in acquiring a company in Germany that was making equipments for sighting rockets, you know, the Theodolites are called. And this company had been in that was in that business, and so he acquired the company. It's called Bodensee-Werk Perkin. Oh, it's this company, Bodensee-Werk Perkin Elmer. It was in southern Germany, right on the Lake Constance, the Bodensee, and nice place. And so next step was to consider whether they would be able to manufacture our analytical instruments. And of course, the principal instrument was the Model 21. So it was decided that they would, that we would transfer all the drawings, etc., etc., to Bodensee-Werk so they could manufacture a duplicate of the Model 21. We were selling maybe five or six of them per year at that time. And then soon after the they started manufacturing the Model 21, the sales went up to maybe 40 or 50 a year.
Wow.
Just because it was made by Germans in Germany and then had the instruction manuals and so forth. They then got into gas chromatography later on and all many of the methods. Perkin met a guy in England. Forgot his name, and working again with Harry Hausdorff, they decided to build up a company from scratch in England called Perkin Elmer Limited in Beaconsfield, mm-hmm. near London, not too far north of London. And it was decided this company was going to manufacture the Model 137 low cost infrared. And they thought there'd be quite a market for that in England. And so that's how that happened. And Harry Hausdorff was a principal person working with Dick Perkin at that time on these things. And he eventually transferred to Europe, and Perkin Elmer had a Zurich office, and he became the European sales manager and overall manager of stuff, and started building up the sales organization, which was a very powerful one. And that was Harry Hausdorff's work. He was also quite an expert infrared spectroscopist, and I worked closely with him when he came in on various aspects of infrared that he thought was important. It turned out to be some pretty good things. And when he went to Europe, that left that whole area blank. There was nobody there to run the lab or anything. So I took it over, and we called it applications engineering, because part of the function was that I was running and to take it over was the building of special instruments, which customers would come to us and say, can you make me an infrared instrument that has a polarizer? And so then I would sit down and I would design the infrared polarizers. Would you design these, like the air pollution district down in Los Angeles? They wanted to have these very long path gas cells, and so I would design those. And those were all special engineering jobs initially, and then once they were built, then other people wanted them, so it became part of the business. So that's basically it. And so applications engineering and special engineering development and design was under me and part of my duties at that time, from I would say 1953-54 through 1960 or thereabouts. So we did a lot of interesting things. One of the interesting things, which I mentioned to you earlier, was the conversion of the Model 13 to the U, the Universal Spectrophotometer. So that was a special engineering job and turned out to be very successful. We also did instruments for measuring fluorescence, and we built instruments that would also operate in the ultraviolet range. And we started moving into that range and started to get more and more in competition with Beckman at that point.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically it.
So you were doing new product development within the applications group?
It would be a special product, and then having gotten doing it in a rather detailed way, so that once the product was completed, it could be duplicated.
Mm-hmm.
Because my experience was that you do very nice drawings and you put them into the shop, and then they can do these things. And so if you wanted to build one, you get one, but you could build 2, 3, 4, 10, whatever. So we got into a lot of that. One of the interesting things that happened was that Agnes, can you pick up my phone? One of the interesting things that I'm thinking of it now, it's slipped my mind, I just to shut off.
Okay.
Van Wyms met a guy named Alan Walsh, an Australian, at a Pittsburgh conference back in the late 50s. And he invited him to visit PerkinElmer. And the guy came in and gave a lecture on some work he was doing in atomic absorption. And everybody sort of listened and bell is that. And because we were doing infrared spectroscopy, right? But we're not interested in measuring elements or any of that kind of stuff. So I attended, and he left. And I was very impressed by what he told us about being able to measure the concentration of materials in a flame or in a various ways. And so I had this lab. So I set up the Model 13 again to do atomic absorption. And so I bought a Beckman flame source, and then I put another Beckman flame source in the sample space, and the beam was chopped, and it went through, and then I sucked up a solution of, I think it was magnesium, and then different concentrations, and I could see, boom, 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 you could measure the concentration of magnesium. So this was sort of like a year after Alan Walsh had been there. So I called Van Williams and I said, take a look at this. I said, this works. This is what this guy talked about. And he said, yeah, well, I don't know whether it's something we're interested in or not. So I told everybody else in the company that I wrote some reports on it. And that eventually led to setting up a project to build the atomic absorption systems, which Walter Slavin was in charge of. And that became one of PerkinElmer's several hundred million dollar a year businesses.
Mm.
But they didn't pay much attention to it. But by doing that work and showing that it worked and that it was easy enough to do, that sort of lit the flame. So that was something I did that I was very proud of that time. That was part of our applications work.
Was Walter working for you at
that? No, he was he was working in engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing some work on actually putting, I think, diffraction gratings in the Model 137, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was his job. And then he got involved in this. But you have to talk to him about all his details. It's very complicated. He worked with a guy named Herb Kahn, who was a very excellent guy, K-A-H-N. Worked with Walter very hand in glove on all of the potential applications of atomic absorption, and there was enormous amount of work done by those guys in that area. That was very special.
Was there, at this time, was there a distinct R&D group or new product?
There was an engineering department that was given the job of production design of new instruments, such as the 137, eventually as the atomic absorption and so forth. That was an engineering department. There was this other thing which would be applications engineering, in which you would do a study, but that would be more of a research function.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that, you'd then come up with specifications for a product. And so that's the way that worked.
And then could you tell us about the transition from your involvement with managing the application engineering group to, was that then into the whole Hitachi area? Was the transition there?
Yes, I took the job as what was called Director of Research and Development for our European subsidiaries.
Mm.
It was my job to travel to Europe, which was very delightful, and to go to Germany and to help them transfer the Model 21 for manufacturing, and then also to transfer the Model 137 for manufacture, and to get them to get into gas chromatography. And so I spent several years traveling to PerkinElmer Limited and to Bodensee Werk PerkinElmer to do these transferred products, and then eventually they started making their own stuff. So I spent a couple of years, and then I was in what was then called the International Operations Group.
Mm-hmm.
And I was Director of Product Research and Development. And then when the Hitachi thing came along, they tabbed me to study the Hitachi instruments and to travel to Japan, which was the last thing I wanted to do because I wasn't interested in Japan, because I had never been there. Once I got there, then I became very interested, as you know. So that was the transition there. I got involved with the Hitachi program, and then I no longer was involved with the Bodensee Werk or PerkinElmer Limited program at all.
Mm.
They had already transferred their products and were busily off doing their thing.
In coming out to California, initially with still working with PerkinElmer and then starting a company of your own, it seems like you were moving in a way from a quintessentially East Coast company in terms of corporate culture, PerkinElmer.
That had now become a very large company by that time.
Right.
With many people and many divisions and divisions and divisions of people. And they had this big semiconductor division they were working on, and they had their telescopes and optical products of different kinds. They also had some other products. Paul Wilkes was involved with a division called the Vernistat Division, which was kind of a 10-term potentiometer thing that had been developed and invented at PerkinElmer, and that's what he did wrong guy.
Mm-hmm.
That was not Paul Wilkes. It was Horace McDonald did that.
Okay.
So, there were a lot of things going on. It became such a large company that you wouldn't know what was happening. You just had your own little area that you were working in.
Well, could you talk a little bit about the contrast, if you did find one, between the business climate, in Connecticut, and the business climate, here on the peninsula?
Well, PerkinElmer had become a very large company in Connecticut, with lots of sales offices throughout the United States, they had set up this relationship with Hitachi, and they had their Bodensee Werk and PerkinElmer Limited factories, and they had sales organization that Harry Hausdorff had worked with all over Europe, and so they were a very large company, and a lot of products, and pretty big sales. They were getting up towards $1 billion or thereabouts, I don't know exactly what. And so it was not as interesting unless you were in top management to run all of these things. And I was not. I was still involved with infrared and other products, but when the Hitachi thing came along and there was a lot more stuff to pay attention to, I liked the idea of moving to California because I'd come there many times and I had kind of a thought in my mind, this place I'd like to end up. So that's what I did. I just, and when they acquired the Ultec company in Mountain View here, which was a small company, it sounded like a nice atmosphere there, small company, things mm-hmm. going on, that I could get involved with electron microscopes and other stuff. And
what was Ultec producing at that time?
They produced ion pumps. These are pumps that actually can produce a vacuum down way, way below the norm, the ultimate vacuums, 10 to minus 10, 10 to minus 11 torr.
Wow.
And these were very special. And the guy had set up the company, had made this work. So their principal products were selling these pumps, but they did not have an instrument business. So I came out here and I carried with them the whole concept of an instrument business, which would be selling electron microscopes, selling mass spectrometers, selling all of these things and so forth.
And both of those need vacuum, right?
Right, right. You broke the code.
Okay.
And that's when I got interested and visited the University of Chicago and visited Al Crewe.
Right.
And he had come up with this field emission electron microscope. The place to design that and build it was at Ultec because they had the pumps were needed for that.
No idea.
So that worked. So that made sense.
I also wanted to ask you about at this juncture, when they asked you to return to Connecticut, you said, no thank you, I'll stay, and you're thinking of form your own company. Lessons that you learned from at PerkinElmer that you wanted to repeat in your new venture, and things that you learned that you wanted to avoid in your new venture?
Well, PerkinElmer had become so complicated and so many different things going on, so many different products, and there are different divisions and so forth, that it was a kind of a relief to have a single product thing with few people and to concentrate on that and to make it happen. That's basically it. And I had, you know, when you think about, you know, being an engineer that had designed some things and being involved with special engineering and doing a lot of other designs, and then getting involved with customers, going to the Pittsburgh conference, and then eventually ending up in international operations and going around and traveling all over and working with all the salespeople in the United States and all over Europe and so forth. It was pretty easy for me to start a company and to decide how to make it work. So I had good experience, yeah.
And just to talk about the financial dimension of setting up your own firm, how did you self-finance that in the early days, or what was your strategy?
Well, I had some money which I had saved through my work at PerkinElmer. And I had some PerkinElmer stock options, which I cashed in and got some money. So I did the financing. Len Walter did not have any money, but he had the know-how on field emission coming from the University of Chicago. So the two of us worked very well together. And we then developed a product, which was the field emission gun itself. And we sold it to a company out here who wanted to add that field emission gun to their electron optics system. So we got an order for 10 or 15 of those, and that was we financed ourselves all the way through that first year. And when we got that order, then he and I proceeded to take that gun and then add the rest of it, and we ended up with a scanning electron microscope product. And by the time we finished that, we were out of money. And we went around and talked to a lot of people, financial people and so forth. And then American Optical saw our product at a show where we were demonstrating it, and they got all excited because they were very, very big in optical microscopes, the American Optical Company. And so they thought that they should start to get into scanning electron microscopes as a direction. So they bought us out and gave us nice royalties and so forth. So that gave us the funds to proceed with the design and to introduce the product and so forth. After two or three years,